Thank you. Welcome back to the show. This segment brought to you by Nate's Cough.
Thank you.
Got Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star in studio. Hello, Sam. How are you?
Doing good. How are you?
Yeah.
That's it.
Oh, it's tough to do a sports talk show on a day you don't want to talk about sports.
Right.
Little, right. You know.
Yeah. The Royals play yesterday?
What?
Huh?
Sure.
I don't know.
That's what you call it. Did you watch Brady Singer pitch over the weekend?
A little bit.
I enjoyed that. Big game, Brady.
Yeah, against Casey Mize. That was fun. That was fun.
And Coar, he pitched well.
Yeah.
But now they have to go to the third game against Auburn, so we'll see if they advance to the College World Series again. But the Royals will not be advancing to the College World Series after another loss. They're 22-44. John Jay's gone. More people will be out the door. And so we asked BMAC this.
Bye-bye.
And I'll ask you, when do you think they should give Mondesi another look-see at the majors?
You know what? I have not paid attention to how he's doing.
He's hitting .267. He's got a decent on-base percentage.
So if you're asking me, like, my opinion...
It's .267, .310, but his slugging percentage is excellent, .533. And so in 105 at-bats, he's got 7 doubles, 3 triples, 5 homers, 10 steals, 7 walks, 25 strikeouts.
That's still the problem, is the strikeouts. And that can get exposed at the big league level. We've seen that exposed at the big league level. 25 strikeouts in 25 games, you know, against Triple-A pitching is just a little too much. Because once you get to the big leagues, traditionally, historically, the strikeout numbers stay there and the power numbers diminish because they've got scouting reports. They're not going to give you something, you know, blah, 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 blah. But if you're asking my opinion on when Mondesi should be up, my opinion is opening day. You know, like my opinion.
Wait
is,
a minute.
You know what I mean?
Too like, late for that,
can't
Sam.
Do that.
Like, I don't.
But 2019?
I don't get it. You know, I feel like they've mishandled him like something fierce. You know, almost from the beginning, it just seems strange to me of, you know, from, somehow choosing him over the guy that ends up being, if not your best player, certainly one of your best players on opening day. What was that? 2 years ago in 16
last year, wasn't it?
And was it last year?
Wasn't it? Yeah.
With Merrifield. And,
yep.
You know, and then like, why not have him up this year when you know, you're not going to win. And I know, like, their line has always been, like, we can't trust if he'll stay healthy and all that stuff. And I get it. Like, you need a shortstop. And, you know, Lord knows if there's one thing that Alcides Escobar can do, it's show up every day for work and play shortstop unless he gets kneed in the head, you know, with kind of a dirty slide. You know, but with Mondesi, to me, I don't know what you're losing at this point. You know, the team stinks. He's young. He's incredibly gifted. You know, that power is coming through, and that power is something that we talked about on this show before he had been showing it, that he's got that in him. He hit that, what was that, like a 430-some-foot home run last year? Do you remember that? Like the dead
yep.
center
yep.
At Kauffman Stadium. I mean, he's got that in him. He's got a terrific arm. You know, defensively, you know, I don't know if people will believe this, but I believe it. Defensively right now, I think that he can be an upgrade over Escobar. I think he's got, you know, the arm is probably pretty similar. Escobar's got a terrific arm, but maybe the range is a little bit better. He had a little bit of problem, if you remember, when he was playing second base in the big leagues, of picking up the ball at times. I assume that he's worked that out. But I just think if you've got a guy that talented, you know, you might as well see what you've got. You might as well see what you've got.
No, I'm with you. I'm ready for Mondesi to come up. I'm ready for Ryan O'Hearn. Oh, I've been ready for Ryan O'Hearn to be the first baseman, just to watch him. You know, I'm not as interested in Hunter Dozier as others.
But the other part of that, I don't think you were like literally asking me like, Sam, when do you think that he should be up? I think are you kind of asking like when the Royals will bring him up?
But I don't
and
like I don't
it
know.
It might be a while. You
like,
know,
like, what just. I can't figure out what they're doing with him.
It might be a minute. I think they look at this. I haven't heard them say this, you know, sort of directly in these words, but I believe that they're looking at this season kind of in two parts. And I think we're seeing the first part wind down really quick. The first part was, let's see if we can be the 2017 Twins. You know, like just lightning in a bottle, you know, see if that's out there, whatever. And not going to happen. And now I think they're going to trade. You've already seen John Jay. You know, we've talked about this ad nauseum, but, you know, Moose, Herrera, there's some other guys that are going to be out. And then, you know, it sort of as a mile marker, you know, I think Bonifacio coming back from suspension, I think is kind of the beginning of the second team, if you will. And so I don't know if that means in a month, you know, in a month, maybe that Mondesi comes up. The problem, like, this sounds really dumb, but from the Royals' perspective, not my perspective, I don't think any of your perspectives, but from the Royals' perspective, where exactly does he play? It's going to be the outfield again. You know, that might make the most sense, but once Bonifacio comes back, it becomes pretty crowded because at second base, you've got either the best or second or third best player on the team, Whit Merrifield. Alcides Escobar, they love him. They know he can play every day, and once Alcides Escobar isn't playing every day, what do you do with him? Do you just release him? You know, they've got – it's sort of some domino decisions that they'll have to make at some point.
So I keep complaining about this. I think Nate's getting irritated with me complaining about this. Jake, I don't know, whatever. He's always irritated. But so, like, if the Royals – if we're all going to sign off on this game plan that the Royals had with John – signing John Jay, flipping him, signing Lucas Duda, who should have never been signed. I still don't get it, and whatever. And so by the time he comes back, they're going to hopefully have moved on, and it's going to be Dozier, O'Hearn. You know, bringing back Moustakas for you to flip him, I totally get that. I'm sorry, for a team that is so desperate to rebuild the system, they should not get a pass on what happened with Clay Buchholz.
Yeah.
They should not get a pass for that because they had him in the system. They had a chance to evaluate him. He pitched well in the minors. And I'm sorry, he's going to get more. If he would have been pitching this well for the Royals, he would get you more than Lucas Duda or John Jay, if that's really what they're trying to do. So now, like today, I have to read in the Boston Globe, Clay Buchholz, staff savior, the Diamondbacks think so. How did this happen? And they're talking about how his cutter has a chance to change his career, and give him a second chance at success. He has 21 strikeouts and 3 walks in 24 innings and a 1.88 ERA and a 0.83 WHIP. With Arizona, they say he's Torrey Lovello, their manager. He's been outstanding for us. He deserves to get the ball every 5 days. Zach Godley, who was one of the best starting pitchers last year, is going to lose his spot in the rotation because of Buchholz. When you need every possible resource to try to rebuild the farm system, how did they miss that one? And they're throwing $1 million of Blaine Bowyer and these other guys. So why didn't what happened here? That's alarming to me.
Yes, I agree. I mean, because Arnold was only like 2 or 3 starts, I think. But he was good in the system too with the Royals.
Right.
When he was in Omaha, he was pitching well. I don't know, man. I wish I had an answer for you that didn't sound like they just whiffed on this one. You know, because he's again. If you're trying to be the 2017 Twins, you need something like Clay Buchholz to click.
Was May 1st.
Yeah, yeah. That was the clause, right? Like that he had a May 1st out clause. Mm-hmm. You know, you're either going to be in the big leagues or they got to cut you. It just. To me, like Clay Buchholz fits both of these scenarios. He fits the possible, you know, sort of pipe dream 2017 Twin scenario. And he also fits the John Jay, Lucas Duda, you know, flip him at the deadline. Mike Moustakas, flip him at the deadline. I don't get it, man. I wish I had like a, here's what you're missing, Steven. But I don't.
Right. And I'm not saying this because I thought the Royals could contend with him. They're not in the business. They're not in the position to give away effective starting pitchers that they could turn into something.
1,000,000%. Yep.
And so I don't get it.
Whiff.
How did they miss so badly on this when he goes right to Arizona and now a contending team that has a chance to go to the World Series is calling him their staff savior?
Yeah, there are obviously some like health concerns, right?
But sure there
when,
are.
They don't need him to be healthy forever. They need him just to be healthy like day to day.
He was a lottery
to get.
Right, he was a lottery ticket.
Yep. Yep.
And they scratched it off, and it looked like it was a winner, and they threw it down on the ground. Yep. Somebody else picked it up and went and collected.
Yep.
This is what happened.
Rotation's been so good though, Steven. I don't know where you put him. Sorry,
Nate. Your witness. I'm off my soapbox. I'm gonna sit down there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. I don't know what else to say about the Buchholz situation. When it comes to Mondesi, the one thing that I feel like from the organization standpoint is that I think I get the sense that they maybe realized they made a mistake with the way they handled it last year, calling him up when he wasn't ready.
Yeah.
And I think they have questions about his commitment. Yeah. And I think they're trying to make him earn his way to the big leagues this time because he didn't last time around, and that didn't turn out well for anybody. And I kind of feel like, as much as it sucks to watch an Alcides Escobar post a 268 on base percentage and not be part of the future, I don't see any reason to rush Raul Mondesi and start his service time clock right now anyway. If he were hitting 340 and like just banging the door down, then at some point maybe he's doing pretty well in Omaha, but I'm kind of fine with them saying, no, you're going to have to, we screwed up. We pushed you to the big leagues before you earned it or were ready. So now, and you've not really shown a commitment to being a professional at this point. So we're going to wait. I don't really have a problem with that, I guess.
The service time is a good point. I haven't done the math on that to know, you know, how long they need to keep him down to keep the extra year. That's a good point. That's something that I think the Royals traditionally have needed to pay more attention to. You know, they've kind of gone the opposite way in some way. Like, you know, clear back, one of the first decisions that Dayton Moore's, you know, sort of leadership made was Alex Gordon as the opening day, at that time, third baseman.
Yeah.
In what was, that would have been 2007, which cost them an extra year, you know, at least in theory. Yeah. Ended up going down because of the hip and everything. But Eric Hosmer,
yeah,
was brought up. That wasn't a service time issue, but it cost them millions of dollars in arbitration because they brought him up before the Super 2 deadline.
Yep.
You know, that is something that I think that they should pay more attention to. But the weird thing, I guess, the best way I can articulate the handling of Mondesi and why it's strange is, like, one of this front office's greatest strengths to me in dragging it from, you know, what it was to World Series championship is sort of a focus and sort of, you know, they don't deviate. They have a plan and they stick to it. And sometimes it drives you crazy, but they stick to their plan. They believe it. And with Mondesi, they're all over the map. You know, the guy makes his debut in the World Series, right? And, you know, they're pushing him, pushing him, pushing him. They choose him. Again, like, and this was despite their own best interests with service time. They made him their opening day second baseman over Whit Merrifield, a guy that turns out to be a much better player, at least at this point in their careers. And now they're holding him back. It's like they've had, you know, all these different plans. Their pendulum on Mondesi has shifted so wildly. And it's just, to me, that's uncharacteristic of their front office. Maybe what you're saying right now about, you know, questioning his commitment and that kind of thing, maybe that's the answer. Maybe that is why they've done this. Maybe it was all the talent. That's why he debuts in the World Series. That's why he's the opening day second baseman over Whit Merrifield. They're awed by this talent, and they have been. And then maybe, maybe we gave him too much too soon and he's earned it. Maybe that's the answer. That makes logical sense. But to me, that's like everybody else that they've, not everybody without exception, but for the most part, their strength has always been don't deviate, have a plan, stick with it, it'll work out. And with Mondesi, they really haven't done that.
I think maybe there's also this is a microcosm of the shift in what their priorities are. Because when the team was still trying to compete, they were calling up guys like Terrence Gore and Raul Mondesi for postseasons and then to play right away. And now all of a sudden, it's more of the long-term approach again. It's, okay, we've got to put together a farm system. We're a ways away. Like it's like now they know they're a ways away from winning games. And I don't know. My frustration is actually with Raul Mondesi and not with the organization. And I could be an outlier on that one, but the drug suspension, the lack of interest apparently in playing winter ball, the lack of being able to stay on the field with what some might consider to be minor injuries, those things to me have halted his progress. Because to me, the Royals have shown if they believe in you and they think you're ready to play and want to play, they will call you up. And the guys that they don't, they've usually been pretty right about, you know? And so, I don't know. Now, obviously, they weren't right about Clay Buchholz. That's a different situation. You know, I'm talking about the guys through their own system. They want Raul Mondesi to be a great player. Like, they want him to be, you know, I don't think they have any, like, any reason not to want to progress him. So,
do you not think he's a prospect anymore?
No, I'm not saying that. But
you
I think
Mondesi is gone to see as far
no,
as.
No, I'm not prospect. Saying that, but I'm saying I think that he's got a.
No, I can't. Okay,
here's my column.
I appreciate your hustle there.
Why Mondesi is Gondesi.
Yeah.
Here's my column.
Yeah.
I did like appreciate that. Like the look of pride on your face.
Yeah, he's nodding very satisfied.
I was nodding approval at my own.
Yeah.
Work.
No, I'm not saying I'm done with him as a prospect. I'm saying I wouldn't mind at all if he spent the entire year in AAA. Like that wouldn't bother me. Or if like it was one of those things where he spent the vast majority of the year in AAA and then he came up in September or toward the end of the season. That doesn't bother me because this team's not going anywhere. He still hasn't really proven himself as a minor league player that much yet. So I'm fine with it. And also it closes the gap between that other wave of players, those guys that you're excited about in A ball and high and low A. It closes the gap one more year for those guys to try to come together. And I actually do. I know a lot of people have a problem with this. I actually do like the idea of them trying to line up the wave of players to come together, because that's the hardest thing to me about being a small market team and building a team through the through the farm system is getting it to timeout where guys are there at the same time, pitchers and hitters and position players and all that. So I don't have a problem with them artificially trying to narrow that gap as well. If they think he's the shortstop for a 6-year period, that'd be as close to when those other guys hit the big leagues as possible.
Nicky Lopez would be the shortstop.
Okay. And maybe that's how they, you know, look at things now. I don't know. I'm not done with Mondesi. And the good thing about Mondesi is because of his athleticism, he can play a lot of places. If he's not a shortstop, he can play second base or he can play in the outfield, you know.
I think more and more they're looking at him as a center fielder, but that's just, you know, I'm reading between the lines a little bit. But this is two straight years, you know, assuming that if his numbers hold up, this is two straight years that he's hit for a lot of power in Omaha, you know, in that league. And that means something. You know, he's still...
And what's he, only 22?
22, yeah. So,
that's,
I mean,
young,
he's still
for AAA.
Young for that league. You know, if he
things
debuts,
are changing, though, now. You know, prospects are getting to the league younger and younger.
Yep.
You know, there's a huge shift there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, right or wrong, and mostly it's wrong, but, you know, Francisco Lindor is an easy comp, you know, switch hitting shortstop with a lot of power and all that stuff. And he was balling out. I mean, he was an all-star by this age, right?
Oh, yeah, it's... You're starting to see teams, I mean, and teams that are trying to actually win. But even the Rays, you know, is called up Jake Bowers, who I like because it makes me think of Jack Bauer as a baseball player. But it's Jake Bowers. And it also makes me think of Jake. So I think about two of my favorite people, Kiefer Sutherland and Jake Pounders.
Thanks, man.
You like that?
I love it.
Jake Bowers. That's what I think of. I think about how many times we used to like watching 24 together. And I feel like that created this player for Tampa. This guy called up. I don't know. I think outside the box, Sam.
This is...
You don't watch Westworld, do you?
No, but this is... I'm seeing, like, in real time what happens to you when it's June 11th and the Royals are 22 and 44.
A lot of things are happening in his head right now. A lot of things are going on. So here, let me bring this up.
Yeah.
Jim Bowden wrote an article that was released within the last hour of players who will be available at the trade deadline at every position. And he says, realistic starting pitching targets. And on the list is Danny Duffy. Danny Duffy's coming off his best start. 7 innings of shutout ball, 3 walks, 10 strikeouts. But he writes, Duffy has a whip of 1.6, an ERA of 5.81, and 3 years left on a $65 million contract. I doubt anyone takes that chance unless the Royals eat most of the contract and some pitching coach believes he can fix him quickly, since he's only 29 and experiencing his only bad season since 2011. So do you consider Danny Duffy a realistic trade candidate, or has he been too inconsistent for the Royals to get enough for him and not have to pay a portion of his contract, as Jim Bowden suggests? What do you consider Danny Duffy now? Off the table as far as the trade market? What?
Everybody should be on the table for the Royals, with the possible exception of Jacob Junis. But no, so I think he should be on the table. But I do agree that
his trade value is diminished. I mean, you know, like if he just goes off from here until July 31st and has, you know, he's 7 innings, 1 run, 8 strikeouts, a lot of nights.
Right.
If he does something like that,
right.
Yeah. You know, then maybe the calculus changes. But it's you mentioned that contract, and that's the deal. It's if it was just a 2-month rental plus the postseason, you'd feel a little bit better about, you know, kind of riding this hot streak. But that, now you got 3 more years, and it's still a relative. I mean, in big league baseball terms, that contract is below market. You know, especially if he turns out to be as good as I think a lot of us believe that he is. You know, for a left-handed starting pitcher, you know, that can get that number of strikeouts and you know, be middle to the top of the rotation guy, that's not a bad contract at all. That's a good contract for a club. But I just, you know, that was a nightmarish, 10-start beginning to his season. I would worry that you're not getting full value from him because of those 10 starts. Now, if you can get close to what I think a lot of us would consider full value, I say you trade him. You know, I really do. And I say that as, you know, Danny Duffy is one of my favorite players to watch. Certainly one of my favorite players in that clubhouse to talk to. But I just, you know, every decision they make needs to be what is in the best interest of the, you know, 2021 or 2022 Royals. And to me, you know, whatever you can get back, if you can get back close to full value, 80-90% of full value of Danny Duffy and prospects, that's going to be more valuable to you in 2022 than, you know, a 34 at that point year old Danny Duffy.
Does anybody think they can contend before his contract runs out?
Say that again.
Does anybody think he's going to contend? They're going to contend before his contract runs out in Kansas City?
I wouldn't think so.
When's it out? 2020?
3 years.
It's 3 more years. So
they're going to contend in the next 3 years?
19, 20, 21.
Think so.
They got a chance in 21 if a lot of things go right. But, you know, I would rather have that value in guys that are currently 18, 19, 20 rather than 29.
I agree with you. Let's take a break. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We need to clear some things up before we get back to sports. Oh, this will piss Jake off, but that's why I'm going to do it. So have you seen this thing about on Twitter about IHOP? Now our intern,
yeah,
Yo Gabby Gabba, is all over it, but have you seen this?
Yes.
Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
The IHOP?
Yeah,
okay,
unfortunately.
So they're changing it to IHOP, and they're having people guess, why is it going to be IHOP? And so a bunch of people out there say, oh, it's going to be International House of Breakfast. That makes sense. So they're apparently officially changing their name to International House of Burgers. And so first question, has anyone had a hamburger at IHOP or IHOP ever? Have you?
Look at me, dude. I don't like burgers.
What does that mean to look at you?
I don't know.
By looking at you, I should know if you had a hamburger.
No, but we've talked about this.
What does that mean?
We talked about the fact that I'm not a burger guy.
So
you've never had a burger in your life?
Well, that's weird.
I wouldn't go to IHOP and have a burger.
Let me say this.
Not sober.
I love pancakes. I'll have pancakes.
Right. See, like, I'll just be honest with you. I spent a lot of time at IHOP as a younger man because I dated a girl that worked at IHOP. Uh-huh. And so I'd go there to see her.
Sure.
And so I ate a lot of stuff on that menu. And I think maybe I had a burger one time.
I was
going to
say, if I've had a burger at IHOP, I certainly don't remember it.
And so, and here's the deal. So now I really don't go back to IHOP ever because it reminds me of her, and she was just a bad person.
Oh, I would.
And you know what? And if you're out there, you know exactly who I'm talking about. That's a bad
name. Names.
A bad woman. And so the next, so the point is,
come on.
But she's happy now. So the point is,
bad woman.
But like for me, when you talk about Jake, 2 a.m, whatever else, I gotta say it. Team Waffle House. I know he didn't go to Waffle. I end up at a Waffle.
Yeah.
I was at a Waffle House up off Tiffany Springs with
nothing wrong
some
with
unruly
House.
People. See, you go to Waffle House, and I'm just saying, you know what? Give me these hash browns, scattered, scrambled,
covered,
diced, covered, everything else.
Smothered. Capped,
ordering hash browns, and I love it. And so I have had hamburgers at Waffle House.
The patty melt is unbelievable at Waffle House.
Because when I was a young man, they had the all-you-can-eat menu there. You just keep ordering stuff and whatever. So I have good experience with hamburgers there.
I was taught by Nick Leckie what you do is you order the patty melt, and then you order one waffle, and then you wrap the patty melt in the waffle, and you eat it.
That can be very delicious.
Like you lose the bun?
No, you put it, because it's not a bun. The patty melt is like bread. So the waffle goes on top of the bread, so it's like double bread.
So will you go to have a burger at IHOP?
No.
Can we get you to go there and write a column on
no,
that?
No, you can't.
All right. I saw you also. One more food item before we move on. I saw you
never
tweeting about the return of the Golden Ox.
Yeah.
And let me tell you this. Many wonderful memories when I used to take my sweet mama to a concert, normally Billy Joel or Neil Diamond.
Yeah.
We'd make it a point. We're going to go an hour or two early and have a meal at the Golden Ox and then go right to Kemper Arena and have some fun.
That's where my grandparents would have their anniversary every year.
Danny and Augie Ontiveros, old school Golden Ox, you know, wear some slacks.
Yep, maybe
let's go.
Nice, go back to the boardroom and sit, you know, as a family.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy with that, Sam Mellinger.
There is a generation of, like, now adults.
Right.
Because I'm one of them, sort of.
You are an adult.
Your first steak, I won't speak for you, but my first steak was at the Golden Ox. It was before a Big 8 basketball tournament game. My dad took me. I felt like I was a man. I was probably like 7.
Right. I never felt like I was a man when I was with my dad because he was, you know, he overshadowed me. But the point is,
so is yes, forgive my ignorance,
Golden Ox,
the new Golden Ox in the same place as the old Golden
Ox? Yep. Yep. New and owners, different owners.
And no, we're not going to forgive your ignorance. No.
I don't remember if that was my first steak or not, but that's the first place I remember my parents taking me to, like, a fancy restaurant, to, like, a sit-down meal where you have to sit there and be quiet and, you know.
Yeah, how did that work?
Yeah.
Yeah, I
Nate,
struggled.
Sit there and be quiet.
They're still waiting for that to happen.
Eat your burger, Nate. I really struggled.
And so, like, but I can tell you the three places, all, I don't know which one was first, but, like, was a big deal to me when I was a kid, if we were going to Golden Ox, if we were going to Hereford House downtown, the original Hereford House, like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Or there was a steakhouse that my dad used to take me to that was still the best steak I think I've had in Kansas City, Jimmy and Mary's Steakhouse. I think it probably closed down by 1990 or something like that or whatever. But those three, beautiful memories. And so, yes, I was right with you retweeting that. And I don't know if I haven't talked to anyone that went there, but I hope it's just as good.
I got some response. People, the thing that came through from a few people, they said the food was great. But, you know, like if you go to a restaurant on opening night, you know what I mean?
Right.
Especially on a Friday. I think they open it on a Friday. You know, I assume what he's talking about is like orders getting mixed up, service slow, that kind of thing. I mean, just, you know, normal stuff for a restaurant to
let
it
settle in. Yep. Maybe we'll all go there. Maybe hopefully it's open for lunch. Go
team
there for
meeting?
A lunch or something. Yeah. That's exactly right. To discuss what's going wrong with this show.
I'm in for that.
And so now Nick Buckley has his own topic he'd like to talk to you about.
Well, I really appreciated a column that Sam wrote over the weekend. Where you talked about, you talked with Cliff Illig, of course, one of the co-founders of Cerner and owner of Sporting Kansas City, because there's been a lot of buzz lately about the idea of the NBA coming to Kansas City. And I don't know, I thought it was a good piece, and it sounds like, at least from Cliff Illig's standpoint, this doesn't seem very likely.
Yeah. First of all, it was like I had a byline on it, but it was basically like Cliff wrote it. You know what I mean? Like it was just sort of trying to articulate what he's saying in, you know, an organized way. And, you know, the first thing I asked him was basically, you know, there's another, every few years this happens, right? Another round of sort of, hey, the NBA that could work here. And I talked to him the last time that I felt like this kind of creeped up. And so, you know, we talked again. I just said, has your mind changed? You think this could work? And he just said, candidly, no. And in some ways, we could have ended the interview then. But we went on for another 20 or 30 minutes. And he's thought about it. Like, I think that's one thing that comes through when you talk to him. You know, he's thought about it. But he's thought about it sort of in a way that this is why it's not going to work. And he's got one thing that stuck out from our conversation. I thought, you know, his experience with Sporting, that would, you know, sort of... That would push him to be more open to the NBA. That would push him to, you know, he's done a sports franchise, picked it up when it was, you know, in trouble, you know,
right.
and not very popular and kind of helped build. And he's not the only one. Neil obviously had a huge part in this. Peter, but a bunch of people, but pushed it up to be, you know, a 112 match sellout streak. And, you know, you see Sporting stuff all around town. But to him, he looks at that experience with Sporting over the last, 8 years of sort of the rebranding, whenever that started. And no, I am less inclined
to do something like this because I know the challenges, I know the obstacles, I know the demographics in Kansas City. And, you know, he looks around at, you know, the Nielsen rankings. I don't know if this is like empirical or whatever, but, you know, Sacramento, we always talk about Sacramento is, you know, whenever people talk about Sacramento having the Kings, that's a small market team, right? That's a small market. Sacramento's, I think, number 20 in the Nielsen rankings. Kansas City's 33. So, you know,
Sacramento's 13 markets ahead of Kansas City.
Yeah.
Population size.
Yeah.
Wow.
Here's Salt Lake City, San Antonio. I think San Diego might be, I mean, like close to Kansas City, but I think ahead. And we've already got Chiefs, Royals, Sporting. And so there's not a template. If you look around the country, and this was kind of part of Cliff's point. If you look around the country, there's not a market our size or smaller that has NFL, Major League Baseball, MLS, and either the NBA or NHL. That's just, and not to mention, you know, NASCAR, not to mention, you know, for a lot of people, Kansas basketball is sort of like a pseudo professional franchise. Yeah. And I think for Cliff too, I mean, he's got those seats, you know, courtside seats. Like Kansas basketball is already sucking in a lot of money that would need to go to support an NBA team. There's not a lot of space in Kansas City for another sports franchise. That was basically Cliff's point. And also, this is the other part that stuck out to me. It's not just, I don't think it'll work here, which I think he believes. I think he believes it would not work here. But his point is, I want to put my resources, time, energy into protecting what we have. And you know, and I think he's certainly literally put his money where his mouth is in that with Sporting, you know, and sort of protecting that and making that, you know, that franchise back when it was the Wizards could have moved. Right? Could have left Kansas City. And
you know, the league wanted it to. The league was convinced it wasn't going to work in Kansas City. They wanted to move him to Rochester, New York, or somewhere like that. And they were stunned when the Illigs and Patterson said, no, we're going to keep it here and we're going to make it work.
And can't imagine Sporting leaving now. You know, I mean, they've built it into that. And so his point is, let's protect and enhance what we have here, which includes, by the way, I thought this was maybe the biggest takeaway, is, you know, sort of to use that money. If he has the resources to buy, you know, to pay the expansion fee and all that stuff, if he has the connections to do that, he's gonna instead use that to protect the Royals potentially. That'd be the one. The Chiefs aren't gonna leave, I wouldn't think. But if somebody comes in, if the Glasses want to sell, and somebody comes in with a plan to move them to wherever, Vegas or wherever, Cliff could step up with that money and say, no, we're gonna buy the Royals and keep them here.
So that was the part I wanted to ask you about, because there's been a perception in town for a long time that he's wanted to buy the Royals.
Yeah.
And if there's anybody, I mean, he's got more money than David Glass. Uh-huh. You know, he's built a big, I mean, he owns Cerner or whatever, you know, he founded mm-hmm. it as opposed to being the CEO. But I kind of took from that article that he doesn't really want to at the price that yes. the Royals are at now. He's not interested in actually trying to buy the team, but he would be involved in trying to rescue it if for some reason somebody wanted to move it. Is that what you took from it?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. His dream scenario for the Royals is that somebody else, if the Glasses ever put it up for sale, that somebody else buys it with the intention of keeping it in Kansas City. And you know, I mean, I'm
but
just,
he doesn't want to buy it.
That was my takeaway.
Yeah.
That was my takeaway. I mean, I'm just going to plagiarize Cliff's quote here. That's not how you say it. But this is what Cliff told me. He said, asked about the Royals. That's a big ticket. The time to buy that was when it went for $96 million in 2000, not when it's going to go for $900 million or $1.2 billion. So that's what he's saying. It's a bad investment now, because his point is the next 10 years of professional sports, not just Major League Baseball, but specifically Major League Baseball, the kind of growth, the appreciation of franchise values is not, he doesn't think is going to be the same in the next 10 as it has been the last 10. So this is a bad time to get in.
You'd be buying high instead of buying low.
Yes, yes, yes. But I mean, you know, if you know what Cliff looks like and you watch Royals games, you know, you see him behind the plate. Like yeah. he loves the Royals. Like, I mean, he goes to those games, you know, so he would love to, you know, keep them here, obviously. But I think his dream scenario would be somebody else keeps them here. He can be a fan and continue to put in, you know, for Sporting and other interests that he has around town. But that guy is fiercely proud of Kansas City, fiercely proud of Kansas City. So his intention is to use his money and connections and, you know, sort of power, for lack of a better word, you know, to sort of enhance what we have here rather than bring in an NBA or NHL team.
All I heard was the Sam compare KU to a basically a professional basketball team.
Oh boy,
I knew that was gonna. So, I knew that was gonna be brought back.
Hey,
That was Cliff.
Listen.
That was Cliff.
Cliff. Well, you know what, Cliff? Smartest guy in the room. Okay. Well, all right then. Okay, I'll hear it. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Sam Mellinger in studio. Thank you very much for joining us. The Royals lost again, so there. How's that sound? Not very good, huh?
How many more times are you going to say that on the show? Like, the Royals lost.
I got to update
44.
People. Oh, you mean today or for the rest of the year?
Yeah, the rest of the year. How many more do you think they're going to get to 100?
Well, the thing is, they're going to lose some of the best players on the team.
Yep.
So I don't think Herrera will be here in the second half. I don't think Moose will be here.
Right.
Who else do you think is going? That's a good question. Who else is gone? Because we assume those two, but who else do you think is out the door?
Well, I know I'm a little bit different on this, but to me, they should be shopping Whit Merrifield. I think he would make a lot of sense for a contender.
I'm with you.
Versatility. He's a really good player. Diverse skill set. I think he would make a lot of sense, and I think he would bring back a pretty good return. I know I'm alone, or at least in the minority on this, but I'd shop Salvador Perez. I think he would bring back the biggest return of anybody on the team. I don't know how many more squats those knees have in them, but I think that he's going to be much more valuable now than he will be in 2022 or whenever the Royals are ready to win again. Lucas Duda is not going to bring back much, but shop him, whatever. Jorge Soler is a guy that I would be active with because he's having a really good year. I don't know for sure if he's going to have another year like this, but you'd be giving him to somebody with some club control. And I just think, like, objectively in a vacuum, he is more valuable for another team than he is for the Royals, because playing in Kansas City, that's a big outfield to patrol. That does not, serve his strengths. That serves his weakness. That's a big outfield for him to patrol in a place like if he goes to Chicago, Boston, a place with a smaller ballpark, he can hit more home runs and he's more valuable to them. I would be basically, I don't even mean this, with hyperbole, I would be shopping pretty much everybody on the roster except Jake Junis.
I don't think I would listen on Junis, and I think I'd hold on to Keller.
Yeah, Brad Keller, yes.
Because they've had so much.
He's 20 freaking two.
Right,
man.
Right. Yeah, such a hard time developing starting pitching. Yeah. It feels like it's not too much of a stretch to say those two guys could be in the rotation when the Royals are good again.
Yes.
Right. That's not too crazy.
I agree with that. Yep.
So, and hey, that's pretty good start. If you got 2/5 of your rotation, you think, of what could be a contender again, let's go. And maybe, who knows, they're the one or two guys. Maybe they're in the rotation with Singer and Kowar, and we all feel pretty good in 3 years.
Yeah. It's funny, I got a tweet from somebody last week saying, why would we trade John Jay? He's our only guy that can get on base. And then they got into, why would we trade Whit Merrifield? They need this guy. I'm like, they're 20 games under 500.
Who said that?
Right. Need him for what?
It's and the reason that you trade them is because other teams want them.
Yep.
Like, nobody wants Lucas Duda. You're not getting anything for him. The only guys you're going to get legitimate pieces for are the good players. Mm-hmm. The ones that that have some player control, too, that people want. So that's why.
I'm with you. Are you working on anything special this week, Sam?
They're all special.
Right.
Steven.
Extra special. What about a Father's Day column? Will you have something for me on Sunday?
You know what? I actually I haven't made a phone call on it yet, but I had an idea. But since I haven't made a phone call on it, I'd rather not share it publicly like this. But there's a lot of stuff. Actually, and Nate, you touched on this, or maybe I touched on it. I can't remember who touched it first.
Jake.
But,
always.
He's always touching
the Royals TV contract is something that I want to look in. I don't know if that'll be this week or next week or whatever, but this is the time where they're really, like, the negotiations are, in theory at least, supposed to be getting a little bit more serious. It expires after next season. Usually from now until about opening day next year, that's the window where these things kind of get done, and that thing could go anywhere. I expect them to re-up with Fox, or if it's ESPN by the time the new deal starts, then that. But there's a lot of possibilities out there from, you know, Netflix and you know, Google, and you know, there's a lot of different ways that thing could go.
How about a nice column on the original Patrick Mahomes for Father's Day, and see what Daddy thinks about all these.
There you go. I would
expectations
love to talk
to him. On Patrick Mahomes. Like, look at Jake. I just want you to write about every angle of Patrick Mahomes, everything about him.
You know, I think I am your man.
Let's write it all. I don't care. You know.
I think that's probably going to happen. By the
How about
time
a column on whether he's had a burger at IHOP or not?
I think that would be a short one. Hopefully.
Right. I'd like to read it, though. That's Sam Ellinger. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you. You also gave me an idea, by the way. I think I might, the Buchholz thing. I think I might totally just Let's like. Stephen St. John wants to know.
Stephen St. John is pissed.
Yeah. You are. He's mad about
my
Buchholz.
Because I like Clay Buchholz. Right. I want to go see a pitch. And I could have had him on my L-only team. Now he's in the NL. I had dipped.
Now we get to the real.
Shut up.
Yep. Now we get to the real reason. It's all about rotisserie baseball.
Arizona.
Right.
Now I get it.
Do you want some good Royals news?
Yeah.
If the season ended today, they'd have the number 2 pick next
year. Let's go.
Number 2.
Keep it on.
You want some bad baseball news?
Yes.
Pedro Gomez is reporting that Otani.
Barry Bonds, what?
That Otani is going to have Tommy John surgery, will be out the rest of this year, all of next year, and won't be back till 2020.
Yeah, it sucks.
All of next year. Damn.
14 months.
That's what Pedro Gomez says.
I trust Pedro.
Thank you.
So he can't bat until the end of the year?
He can't do anything if he has Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, I mean, he could do it one-handed.
Well, I mean, if he bats and then at the end of the season has Tommy John surgery.
I think that kind of affects his swing also.
Stefania Bell
right.
was saying that, that would be a possibility with this injury, that he could rest it for a couple weeks and then he would be able to bat and be a DH till the end of the year, and then they could do the surgery.
You'd have to be so goofy to do that, though. What if you hurt it worse? No way. Don't you want to get him back as soon as possible?
I would think.
Like, what do I care? Screw the Angels.
Right.
Wow.
They had their chance, and they got swept by the Royals, so I don't care. I don't care if they ever win. I really don't care. Huh. How about that?
Always goes back to that.
That's exactly right. Everyone have any other suggestions for Sam Ellinger?
Tweet at him.
Tweet them at me, and I'll... I'm his idea guy now. So.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after this on WHB.